For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
Sponsored by Serta Pro Painters. John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
So it's almost as like a relative has died, because the amount of people who've like reached over the last couple of days, yeah, that want to say, are you doing okay? And I'm like, sure. Yeah, I'm fine. They're going to be in another election.
You're doing fine, huh?
Well, they're going to be another election in 2 years.
Yeah.
It won't go well. And look, I mean, I know how it feels to be y'all when it happened to you, and you know how it feels to be us when it happens to us. This is what happens. This is America, and you, elections have consequences, and we're gonna go through them. Maybe they're gonna be good. We're gonna find out.
The sun is out.
Yeah.
And Michael Kelly is looking at bright things with the incoming Trump administration. Does it get any better than that?
Yeah, I was seeing that Australia is going to ban social media for kids under the age of 12 or something.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
You know, as a government policy, that's a little bit of an overreach. I think the principle is sound. Social media, I think, does a lot of harm to kids.
Could you live without social media? Now, I think you and I are both Twitter guys, and not that we tweet.
Right.
But that's where we consume our news. But if you had to make a promise, or it had to be deleted from your phone for one whole year, you could make it?
100%.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, what about when, but don't you see pictures of relatives and friends on Facebook?
No.
No?
No, if I want to see my friends, I go see my friends.
Yeah.
If I want to see my relatives, I'll go see my relatives.
Yeah. You know who's always been a friend of, when I'm watching baseball, I was disappointed. This kind of got lost in the midst of the presidential election, but Bob Costas retired from MLB Network.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
Well, I mean, you know, and we all think of him as young Bobby Costas here, but he's over. He's in his 70s.
Yeah. And I thought he did a fine job calling the playoffs. He got a lot of criticism from the folks in New York, who, of course, didn't like the fact they were, you know, somebody was saying something not nice about the Yankees at times.
Yeah, no, he did a fine job with baseball, and, you know, I wish him well. And, yeah, it
kind of stinks, right?
The end of an era.
Weren't games a little bit different when you were watching them, when, you know, it was Joe Buck, or it's Bob Costas, or
really
it's Dan Dierdorf?
I really do miss Joe Buck on baseball.
Totally. But you have this, like, personal connection to him because they're St. Louisans, and there was a little pride in getting to, you know, see Joe Buck do the games, and or Dan Dierdorf on a Monday night football game or a Sunday afternoon football game. And kind of miss having all our St. Louis guys out there.
Yeah, but everybody deserves the right to retire and enjoy the fruits of their many years of labor. So we wish Bob Costas well out there.
Yeah. You wishing him well?
I am.
Yeah. Wonder if he'd come on with us. I bet he's got some interesting thoughts on the presidential election.
I'm sure he does. A lot of people do. And, you know, I've on purpose not spent a lot of time looking at all the recriminations and different things that people are going through. But I'm sure, you know, plenty of people are very upset.
I flipped on last night at the halftime of the football game. And by the way, it's a nightmare. I had to go out of the Prime app. Then into the DirecTV app.
Yeah, last night was tough because you had the Blues on on regular television, and then Prime had the football game.
So then you're hopping around so you can find out what the score of the hockey game is. You want to see if the world's burning down, and you want to watch a little bit of the football. This life that we were supposed to have that was simpler, it's far from simple, and it's expensive. Like, are you noticing, like, every time I open up Hulu or one of these things, just FYI, on Saturday, rates go to $12.99, you know, and I don't feel like I'm just a sucker. Just come here. Here's my wallet. Come grab it so I can watch your stupid stuff.
Well, now we've got this click-to-cancel thing policy that is in place, so that hopefully that's going to help us get out of some of these silly things that we can't get out of.
Click to cancel. Maybe I'll cancel everything all at once. And then I also would like to start over in creation of logins and passwords.
Yes.
Meaning to have the same login and the same password consistent across anything that I have a subscription on.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you got the Post-Dispatch. I got the Kansas City Star with what we do. I got the Washington Post. All these different things.
You
and they're
the
different
Kansas
logins.
City Star?
Yeah, buddy, I do work over there. What do you have, the Bolivar Journal? Because you do a lot of work on rural Missouri.
I do not.
Is there still a newspaper in Bolivar?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Who's from Bolivar? Is that where from?
Governor Parson.
Yeah, Governor. Most famous Missourian. He is, isn't he?
He is, He's the governor. He's from Bolivar, owned a service station there.
Did he commit to a peaceful transfer of power yet? Has he let Mike Kehoe know that he's not going to?
Yeah, Kehoe was his guy. You know, Kehoe, Governor Parson endorsed him, and Kehoe won.
Yeah.
So, bully.
Yeah. And we're going to, when is the inauguration? When does that all go down?
January the 13th, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So.
You'll be down there in a ball gown? Or a ball outfit, I mean?
Maybe. Maybe.
Why wouldn't you go down there?
I probably will.
It's a big day. You worked on the campaign to put the guy in office.
I did. Yes. So, yeah, I'll probably be there.
Yeah. Truth. Tell the truth. If you were ever to be given free tickets to go to a ball, an inaugural ball up in D.C. ever again, will you do it?
No.
Yeah. Once you've done it once.
And I've done it twice.
Yeah, I've done it a couple of times. It's a lovely, it's an incredible American experience.
Yep.
But it's a pain in the neck.
It's a lot.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
Happy Friday, St. Louis. Only a couple more weeks till Thanksgiving. You heard that right. We'll be talking recipes and stuff here in a couple of weeks, John. But boy, we have an election to recap.
We do.
Feels like we spent the last 3 years of our lives talking about this election. Of course, we had the prosecutions of Donald Trump. We had the announcement of Joe Biden. Donald Trump gets in. Nobody was with him. He really was dead in the water, thinking back at it, right? Many people thought he announced at Mar-a-Lago simply to be involved in a presidential campaign so he wouldn't be prosecuted. We didn't have many people who showed up. Heck, I was in Florida when he announced, and I was going to try to go over and get a press credential.
Yeah,
you remember?
I remember that, yeah.
And look at where we are now. He winds up winning president. You and I were together on Tuesday night, so we lived it a little bit. You had a little bit of time to digest it. I've told you, I really was I was shocked, surprised. I did not see this coming, and I did not see it of the size and scope that it was. And Donald Trump not only did well in ruby red states, he shaved margins in blue states.
Oh, everywhere. Yes.
He brought constituencies that had long been stranglehold by the Democratic Party, whether it be African Americans and folks at the lower income scale that had attracted and always been with the Democratic Party, probably since the Roosevelt era. There was a strong break from that on Tuesday night, and I didn't see it coming. Did you?
Well, I thought he was going to win up until that Iowa poll came out the Saturday before, and I thought, maybe there's something organic happening that I haven't seen. It turned out there wasn't. And, you know, the real clear average of politics kept him, showed that he was going to win. Now, they had her carrying Wisconsin and Michigan, but very narrowly. And, you know, that polling aggregate was remarkably close to predicting the actual margins in the race, even though they missed a couple of states that were very tight. And, you know, and I also think Democrats had a real turnout problem on Tuesday. She didn't get anywhere near the level of votes that Joe Biden had received just 4 years earlier. And that is one I don't know how to explain because, you know, the Democrats supposedly had this great turnout operation. Well, it didn't work.
No. Well, the Democrats had gone with the tried and true, tested shoe leather politics, knock doors, hand out papers. And the Trump campaign went all in on the device that's in your pocket. And guess what paid off? A lot of people think that traditional campaigning may be over with based on what we witnessed. The Democrats spent $1 billion in this campaign. They far outspent the Trump campaign.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They had invested a huge chunk of that money, of course, on television. They couldn't have bought any more television. They had nearly every ad that they could have wanted out there. But they had spent a big amount of money in this ground game and not necessarily the podcast game, et cetera, that Donald Trump went and played. Now, they tried to rescue some of it. They threw Vice President Harris on with Howard Stern and a couple other women's focused podcasts. But Trump was out there working with some podcasts, quite frankly, that I'd never heard of, John, but young people were into.
Yeah, they do. And he did quite well with young voters. And I also think, curious to get your thoughts, but I also think there's a lot of people in this country that are sick and tired of this woke agenda being shoved down their throats, you know, trans kids playing sports and so forth. And I think the cultural aspect of the divide in this country spoke pretty loudly on Tuesday.
Well, it's kind of what James Carville has been saying for the last couple of years about Democrats as we have become this alphabet party, right? And, you know, the some of the legislation potentially that have been considered at the Board of Aldermen, changing the language from he to they, us, then she, you know, to all this kind of stuff. Kind of trivial things for to be focused on. But it was something that a lot of conservatives grasped on and said, look, I'm kind of sick of it. And, you know, I told you about a year ago that what the anger that Donald Trump had was understandable. You know, I get how a person who's driving in from St. Charles to go and work on a construction site, you know, who's listening to KMOX and a lecture from, I don't know, an elected official talking about the injustice that's happening to people in urban areas. And he's sitting there thinking to himself, I don't know how I'm going to pay for my kids' braces.
Right.
Everything becomes relative. And the Democratic Party became the you know, a lot of people think for his progressive movement, the warrior of the identity rather than the collective whole. You know where I've been this whole time. I've been a traditional Democrat. I'm hopeful that this kind of puts further separation from this progressive movement. But, John, I got to tell you, I don't see progressives shrinking up and accepting what happened to them. I think they're going to double down and continue to go with their stuff. What does that mean for the Democratic Party long term?
Right.
Do they emerge as something else?
Well, you know, it's interesting, too, because you're seeing the analysis from some saying that, you know, we, quote, the Democrats, saying we lost the election because we weren't true enough to our base and those principles. And that if Harris spent too much time with Liz Cheney and trying to, court moderates and Republicans, and their own base doesn't follow them, there may be some truth to that on the turnout side, but you're not going to win elections in this country on the cultural extreme left. It's just not going to happen.
Was it the economy, stupid? I mean, we thought it would be abortion. Yeah, and at the end of the day, that's kind of what it's been my entire life, is if the economy's not going well, it doesn't matter if you're the second coming of John F. Kennedy or Ronald Reagan, you're going to pay the consequences for it.
And that 75-78% wrong track number was, you know,
right,
historically pretty predictive, and it certainly was again this year.
And strange to say it's the economy when the market's at the highest numbers that it's been, unemployment's low, interest rates are coming down. Obviously, though, this is still a part of the post-COVID world,
inflation,
where we threw $3 trillion in the air, and then we're shocked that inflation was going to follow.
And it did, and you know, we'll never go back to those pre-pandemic prices. So it's not going to happen. Hopefully, wages will continue to keep up with the cost of inflation and beyond. And, I mean, that's the way you grow out of something like this.
I grew up, I'm an Irish Catholic, go over to my grandparents' house, and of course, you know, we had the crucifix on the wall, but they always had a picture of John F. Kennedy. And there was pride in the fact that an Irishman was elected president of the United States, and it was something that folks focused on. Hillary Clinton becomes the first woman to be nominated. she faces a backlash, some from women. Kamala Harris, the sitting vice president sitting there, is being a woman a liability now? I mean, you would think that it would be an asset that other women would be out voting, but John, in my own social media feeds, women seem to be the hardest on the women candidates.
Yeah, I mean, because everybody was expecting, predicting that this was going to be the year of the female vote, vigorous vote, abortion on the ballot all over the country. But it just didn't materialize. And does a female candidate take some hits because some voters just won't vote for a woman? Probably. But you look all over this country, we've elected female governors, female U.S. senators, you know, a huge percentage of the Congress is female. So, you know, will America elect a female president? The answer is yes. When? I don't know.
The observation I have on the Republican side, this Christian stuff, I felt it in my own life. I saw it on social media, people talking about Jesus is king, and if you believe that, then you've got to be for Donald Trump, etc. This isn't melding, right? It doesn't really meld, and I think people are going to witness over the next 4 years that Donald Trump is the same man he was 4 years ago, hardly the image of Christianity. What's going on? Is religion evaporating and the importance behind religion? I don't get how Donald Trump has become religious icon.
I think part of that is the woke culture and the reaction against it, and you'd find a lot of that in the church. But the other thing is, I think for a lot of people, politics has kind of usurped faith in terms of their priorities and the belief in that somehow we're going to elect our way into a more morally appropriate society, which I think is a wrong idea, but I think that exists in much of the church. And those two things together, I think, explain quite a bit.
Do you anticipate this odd relationship of the evangelical faith and Donald Trump to continue? I mean, he will continue to let them down. He will continue to use language and divisiveness that is really contrary to their message overall. Will it someday, will they recognize that, or is it something bigger?
Well, we'll see. The folks that are all bought in, you know, I'm thinking of that female minister. I can't call her name right now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're in for the duration. And yeah. I suspect they'll be very actively involved in communicating with Donald Trump.
We're going to come back. We're going to have to break here at the top of the hour to do the news, and we're going to get into some more politics later. One of the things I want to talk to you about, John, is what's old is what's new in Missouri, and that is many people think abortion has been resolved now that we've passed this amendment. And I'm here to tell you, I think we're about to live through the 80s and 90s again, where campaigns are run exclusively on pro-life, pro-choice issues.
Well, we're all going to find out.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
Sponsored by Serta Pro Painters. John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Yeah.
Happy Friday.
Yeah, back at you, big boy.
I'm leaving town.
I know you are.
I'm going out of town.
Trip of a lifetime.
Trip of a lifetime, headed to Italy.
Nice.
Yeah. But not going to Rome. Did
not
that once before, yeah.
Huh.
I'm taking the flight, the nonstop flight to Europe from St. Louis on.
Frankfurt.
I
to Frankfurt, right?
Can't say the name of the company. Lufthansa.
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 Lufthansa. Yeah.
See, I thought it was Lufthansa.
No.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm taking the nonstop flight to Germany.
Yeah.
Then I'm hopping a flight to Venice, and then on to check out the Italian world and some of the products of its agriculture.
Yeah. Yeah. So what kind of food are you going to eat? I guess Italian food.
Yeah, Italian food. I'm thinking that the house wine, the table wine over there, ought to be pretty good. And gosh knows that I probably could use a couple of cocktails.
Yeah,
there,
yeah.
Based on
likely to happen.
Yeah.
Well, that's exciting.
I mean, a lot of people are saying, are you going over there to look for property? I'm like, what do you think, I'm going to sell my kidney?
Huh. Expensive is it to live in?
I would imagine, don't you think?
I don't know.
You know, but they don't have the big neighborhoods and subdivisions and buildings and stuff like we do.
Sure they do.
Yeah, not really. In like Italy. Not like America.
In the whole of Italy, they don't have subdivisions?
They have subdivisions, but it's not, well, they don't, they, you know, it's not like, like what we do here. I like going to Europe, but I also like coming back to America.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Now, I was worried that you might leave and never come back, so.
No, there's lots of people threatening that.
Yeah.
That comes up every election cycle.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. And then, well, how long does it take for that to burn off? About 2 weeks?
We'll find out. Mm-hmm. We will find out. But, you know, this is not going to be, I hope and pray, as horrible as a lot of people on the left think it's going to
be. Because the last 4 years, it really wasn't that bad, John. Are you crazy? Do you remember the last 4 years we had with that man? Every night he's going to be involved in everything. He can't get along with anybody. I love it listening to all of the people who are rumored to go work for him and stuff.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking, who would take that job? There's even talk of our own Eric Schmidt maybe taking a job in the administration for Missouri.
As
hey, Eric.
General.
You know, you went south on common sense a long time ago, so don't take my advice, but nobody walks away from Donald Trump. Good. Why not just stay the United States Senator? Wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, I think that's what Senator Schmidt is going to do. I don't think although, you know, if the president asks you to serve, that's not the easiest thing to refuse.
Yeah, but he may eventually.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Try to kill you, so I wouldn't take a job with them. The other word that I was driving in today, and there's a commercial, and it was for dandruff. Have you ever, do bald guys get dandruff?
I imagine.
Do you ever, like, look down at your little shoulders and see, oh, I got a little white flakes there, I got a little dandruff?
I can't recall.
Maybe it's limited to you guys, but occasionally we've all had dandruff, right? A little dry scalp at one time or another. So they're advertising this product to get. It's a dandruff shampoo. And with it, it says, you need to get this right away. Otherwise, the fungus on your skull will continue to grow.
Yeah.
I had no idea that dandruff was ultimately a fungus. I thought it was like dry skin, like you get on your hand.
Yeah.
Now, let me just tell you, fungus is one of those words that I cannot stand. Like when I hear the word fungus, it like pierces my, like I have visuals of like little microbes like eating on stuff, like, you know, like a mushroom, and it just nastiness, and it grows
mushrooms
real quick. Well, I like mushrooms, but I don't like fungus.
That's a fungus.
Yeah, but that's a fungi. Like, it gets fungus. You eat it, right?
And it's a
fungus. Right. Okay. So, what do you want me to scrape some stuff off my head and you'll eat it? It's a fungus. You like mushrooms?
I am not eating the stuff off your head.
Exactly. So, doesn't the word fungus related to your head make you nervous? Like, ugh, that's nasty.
No. I mean, I think the word is perfectly fine. Fungus.
Really? You don't have any words that you don't like?
It's got fun in it. I mean, no. I like all words.
Really?
There's topics I don't like.
Like what topics don't you like?
You know, gross stuff.
Gross stuff.
Yeah, like, you know, body stuff.
Yeah.
I don't like talking about, I'm a little squeamish with that kind of thing. And the
really?
Sight of blood.
But what about a fungus growing on a body?
Yeah, like, it doesn't bother me.
But you just said you're squeamish as it related to, you know, fungus.
Well,
you know, to
body stuff. I don't
stuff.
Like, you know, talking about livers and kidneys.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Not my cup of tea.
Really?
But the words themselves don't bother me. Fungus is not a word that causes me any angst whatsoever.
A lot of people have trouble with the word moist.
What?
Moist. They don't like the word moist.
Why?
They say it messes with their head. I don't know. I think it comes from a TV show. It's never bothered me. I don't mind the word moist, but
that's just weird.
Yeah, but when I hear the word and see the word fungus, it's oof.
Well, you need to get over that.
Yeah.
You know, there's that great Bob Newhart sketch where he's playing a psychiatrist.
The greatest one. Tell it.
And the lady's saying, you know, I got these problems. I can't find a man. And I, you know, just feel so terrible about myself. And he says, stop it. That's it. You know? And it's a great sketch. Most of you have probably seen it out there. But
stop it.
Just stop it. Yeah. Don't let the fungus get in your head, buddy.
All right, I won't. Yesterday, you and I went to St. Charles, my old stomping grounds, not far from the parish I grew up in was the St. Charles Rotary meeting.
Yes.
And we went there and talked about our opinions on the elections, et cetera. Have you ever belonged to the Rotary or a Kiwanis or any of that kind of stuff?
I was in the Lions Club at one point.
What is the Lions Club?
I don't know, but I was in politics at the time, and I thought they invited me to join the Lions Club, so I did. And then I got there, and I realized that they refer to one another as Lion so-and-so.
Lion John
and
Hancock.
And I didn't want to be known as Lion John Hancock when I'm running for office, so I thought maybe I'm going to step aside from
this. Well, but I mean, so what did the Lions do? Like, were they a charitable?
Eyesight, helping people underprivileged.
Were they the ones that used to sell the Tootsie Rolls? Like, you give a quarter into the little thing, and then they give you a big Tootsie Roll?
Yeah, that's it.
I remember that.
Yeah.
And Rotarians, near as I can tell, they're very positive and upbeat. Doesn't seem to have some type of a religious bent. It doesn't. They're just kind of charitable folks.
Very charitable and very service oriented are the Rotarians. It's a great organization.
I was in Key Club when I was a kid, which was Kiwanis.
Right.
Now, I think Kiwanis may have some tie to faith somehow, but it's mainly a service organization.
Right.
And we would do various service projects. We would serve lunch at the Ronald McDonald House, or we would call bingo at the school for the blind nursing home and stuff like that. And, you know, at the time, my school required us to have so many years of community service to be able to get you so many hours of community service. And at the time, I hated it, right? Like, you know, this stinks. I'd rather be doing this, that, or the other. But looking back on it, it was really kind of special to get to go and call bingo in that environment and to work at the Ronald McDonald House.
There's genuine blessing in serving other people.
Yeah.
There really is. And I think folks that have incorporated service into their daytime and life are fundamentally happier people.
Yeah.
I really do.
Do you volunteer your services at places like Habitat for Humanity or something like that?
Well, I'm very involved with a church in the inner city.
Yeah.
And
Great Day Missionary?
Great Day Missionary Baptist Church.
You preach there a couple times a year, don't you?
I'm preaching Sunday.
What are you preaching about this Sunday?
Sin.
Sin?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yep.
That ought to be interesting because usually you're testing stuff out on me like— You came in and you said, Kelly, did you know that Sir Edmund Hillary is the reason we have 15 minutes of fame?
That's right.
Which I did not realize.
You know, I probably ought to have consulted you on this sermon because I can't think of anybody that knows more about sin than you do, Kelly.
Oh, come on. Come on. Well, we got a president that's got some experience with it.
Yeah. Well, we all do. We all have experience with it.
Are you looking forward to preaching?
I am.
Is it open to anyone for faith and worship?
Sure. Yeah.
And what time's Mass or service?
11 o'clock.
Really?
Yeah.
And what time do you go on?
Oh, it just varies.
Yeah. You know,
there's a lot of stuff going on.
Is there a commitment here at a Great Day for a couple hours of faith and love?
It's a couple, two and a half, lengthy service, traditional service, African-American service, a Doc Brown-inspired service that kind of dates back to the Deep South, Mississippi in the 19th century.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Man, you're like a blossoming onion of interest.
Of stuff.
Of really good interest stuff.
Of stuff. I just hope my voice holds out. I've really been, this head cold thing has really been wreaking havoc on the old chops here.
Maybe there's a fungus growing inside your nose.
Fungus going on, yeah.
Doesn't that sound nasty?
It does. We need to step aside, though, Michael, and when we come back, Colonel Jeff McCausland, he's going to be on with us at 9:30 this morning. But we carry on after this on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Hey, look who just walked in the studio with us.
Dave Glover.
He's like the voice of KMOX.
He's the best.
Yeah, the voice of the voice of St. Louis.
The voice of the voice of St. Louis. I'm glad you walked in.
Yeah.
Because you and John both have a unique ability that I'm a bit jealous of, which is that you are MCs of dinners and events. And it's not easy to be the MC because you got to be humorous, you got to keep it moving, and you have to be likable, which is the part that I have trouble with.
I'm closing in on 1,000.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah, I haven't done that much.
The only thing I won't do anymore are trivia nights.
Right.
Because The first three rounds, everyone's having a blast, and you're the belle of the ball. The middle three rounds are starting to get a little sauced.
Yeah.
And by the end, they're just mad at you because the Beatles' last concert was not Shea Stadium. It was the top of Apple Records, and there's just no future in that.
Yeah. Trivia nights are tough.
Yes.
They really are.
They really are.
And they do drag on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you guys have to become like semi-auctioneers as well, right?
That's because the one thing I refuse to do.
Good for you.
Yes, because I'm terrible at it. I'm like, who will give $50? I'm like, I will. I'm like, done.
Right.
Sold. And so they raise like $800. You know,
right.
I'm terrible at it. So I always say you have to bring in either a professional auctioneer or one of your guys can do it.
Can do it.
But I won't do it.
Well, good for you.
And I do auctions.
I bet you're good at it.
I'm not a Yabba Dabba Doo guy, but I do auctions.
And for people who don't go to many of these charitable events like we all have to do, there's usually like you can buy a day or a weekend at the Lake of the Ozarks, you know, and they'll auction that stuff off.
Yeah.
But then there's this thing called Fund the Need,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And folks like yourself stand up there and say to everybody, hey, you know, for $5,000, 20 kids can get new shoes and a backpack and all this other stuff. Who will give me $20,000, you know, or $5,000? And all these people doing it. It goes all the way down to sometimes 50 or 100 bucks.
$5,000 will get you a lot more than 20 shoes.
Like, whatever it is, right? I don't like that. As a person who has to buy tables, right, you get a table of eight. And you're asking somebody to come out on a Friday night, will you and your wife come sit at my table, right? And now you're going to put them in a situation where they get shamed and guilted because I suckered them into filling up a table where they got to give $100 or $50 to this.
They know
and it happens to me every week.
And,
I guess.
And by the time you get down to $100, $100 is nothing to sneeze at. That's
no.
A nice donation. But when you started, like I've when I did the Diabetes Foundation at Stiefel, we started at 50.
Uh-huh.
And I told them, no one's going to give 50.
Yeah.
And they winked at me and said, trust me, two people gave 50 grand. And so when you do 50, 25, 10, 5 grand, you get down to 100, it's like you're spitting in their face.
Right. And then you're sitting there and everybody's uncomfortable, right?
Yes.
Because, and here's the deal, I just want bodies at the table. And so these aren't necessarily people who know the deal, that this is going to, they're going to get peer pressured
yes.
by an entire group. I was in an event, I'm glad it's a couple of weeks away, so it could have been anything. Here is local St. Louis event. I went with my sister, and we wind up being sit right up front. We're sitting at a table right up front, close to the guest of honor.
Right in the front row.
And now here's the fun, the need.
Yeah.
Can I get $10,000? Well, I'm doing the, let's see what's in the, can I get $5,000? Can I get, now we're down into to $2,500. And I'm at a front table and I'm thinking, I'm going to look like a schlep here. There's television cameras here. There's people are coming up and saying hello, et cetera. So there I am raising my hand to give $1,000 away.
Really?
Yes. Because I got guilted into it, and it's because of people like you two.
Yeah,
emceeing these events,
buddy. You don't have to give the money.
But you're fine, John, when everybody's there just shaming you. Can I get $100?
I bet you're fine.
I'm totally fine. Yeah.
How about you? You're like me. You're the guy who's giving the guy the Uber driver 30% because you're afraid he's gonna not like you.
Yes. This is true. I am rarely at a charitable event where I'm not the host.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And one thing that I always do, because a lot of hosts get paid $1,500, $2,500, and I always tell them, here are my rules. I'm gonna wear jeans and a blazer. Okay, no tux for Dave, and you can't pay me. I do it for free.
Uh-huh.
And I always feel like that's my donation.
Yeah, exactly.
Good for you.
And then
exactly
a lot of times, now you've made several donations through me because I will give away your
Cardinal
tickets. And then
by
I'll
the way, I got lots for you to give away this year.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And then I'll give away your tickets, and then they get to go down on the field with me, and they get to go up into the KMOX box with me. And a lot of times we'll get like $5,000 for those.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't feel sheepish about not giving
good
my actual
you.
Cash.
Now, you get paid to go be a charity guy?
No.
No, volunteer, too.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Well, don't do the Fund the Need anymore. Don't shame me. I don't like it. Did you guys see this? That 43 monkeys escaped? And
it's a great name for a band.
Yeah,
right?
No kidding.
They escaped from a lab. And, like,
a
so
lab?
People are being told, and some player in the Carolinas, to leave your doors locked and stay in because the monkeys are running rampant.
What are they testing on monkeys in a lab?
I would imagine makeup.
In North Carolina.
Makeup. Vaccines or something.
They're
testing
makeup on monkeys.
Yeah, they
North
test
Carolina.
Everything on monkeys.
Huh.
Like your toothpaste has been tested on
They're
monkeys.
They're testing toothpaste
Visine.
On monkeys.
You know this, of course,
no,
right?
No, I don't know this.
You don't know that they test animals to make sure that the products that you're using are safe? Huh. And why they use monkeys?
There's a lot you don't know.
So if you're telling me that makeup is toxic?
Makeup is, it can be.
I put makeup on a monkey once, but it wasn't for testing.
I'm fascinated by monkeys.
I grew up next to a monkey.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
What did he,
remember my stand-up? Uh-huh. I can't really do it now. Remember?
Right. Yes.
He lived down the alleyway.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
He had two hobbies, eating apples. And
something else.
Yes,
yeah.
And he was always out of apples. So right. I would walk past that guy when I was about 12 or 13. I'm like, well, that's interesting.
Did that monkey ever get did it get to a size? Because they can get super
These were like
strength.
He was like the organ grinder monkey, the one on the Little Rascals.
Oh, a little monkey.
Yes.
A tiny monkey.
He's a little monkey in a big cage with nothing but time on his hands.
Yeah,
a little more than time on his hands.
I've never been to Costa Rica or some of these places that have monkeys run wild.
I've
never been to a place
they're
where
terrifying.
Monkeys run wild.
Well, yes. Like in The Wizard of Oz.
No, like little bitty monkeys. They'll come up to you when you're sitting on a park bench and sit next to you type monkeys. Not like...
Start a conversation.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Can you imagine?
We've all learned something today.
We've learned a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't do the fun to need anymore.
I'm going to do the fun to need.
Yeah, and you're going to look at me, Kelly, what about $1,000 we'll send 12 kids to get new eyeglasses?
I'm going to call you up by name.
Yeah, right.
You're going to Italy, apparently, with $1,000 less than you had the other day. So.
Yeah.
We got to come back. Jeff McCausland is going to join us. The future of Ukraine, that's next on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Hancock and Kelly Show. We go to the celebrity guest line where we're joined by Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS News military analyst, and obviously Tuesday, a major day in the United States, but the impact will be felt beyond the borders of the United States. And one of the things, Colonel, that President Trump-elect ran on is that he says he's going to solve the Ukraine-Russian conflict prior to him even arriving in office. How do you see that? Is that what's transpiring right now?
Well, he certainly said that. There's no two ways about that. Whether or not he can affect that and affect that prior to his inauguration, I think is a bit more problematical, to say the least. Certainly, there's no indication on the parts of the Ukrainians that they're interested in bringing this war to a close quickly. And frankly, there's no indication on the side of Vladimir Putin, who over the last month or so has simply intensified his attacks on Ukraine to the tune of about 2,000 drones struck Ukrainian cities during the month of October alone. Every night in the month of October, I think, except one, the capital of Kyiv, was hit by drone attacks. So the only way you're going to bring this to a close in 24 hours is if you either A, convince, or B, force the Ukrainians, in essence, to surrender and accept the terms that Mr. Putin has indicated from the onset, which is an acknowledgement that these four provinces that he claims are Russian go to Russia, number one. Number two, that the Ukrainian government is neutralized, probably means replacing the president, a large portion of the government. And number three, the Ukrainians renounce and NATO renounces any possibility of Ukraine ever entering NATO. So absent that kind of a deal, I don't see how you do this in 24 hours.
We saw President Putin acknowledge President Trump's victory. Has President Zelensky spoken yet? And how are the spoken yet about it? And how are the NATO allies reacting to what could be a complete upheaval in the alliance?
Well, there's a major NATO, a major European Union, I should say, meeting ongoing in Budapest at this particular moment. And ironically, that was supposed to be a rather informal discussion on issues for the future, and became very quickly, it appears, a discussion of what we're going to do now with a new Trump administration. A lot of concern in Europe, particularly for the possibility, as we have said, of ending this war abruptly in Ukraine and reducing military assistance to Ukraine and basically accepting Russian aggression. Whether or not the Europeans have the wherewithal to provide the Ukrainians the military assistance that they would need if the United States quit providing our support. That also remains to be seen. I think it's going to be difficult, if not unlikely. So there's an awful lot of concern in Europe about not only, I think, the Trump administration for the second term, but more broadly, I had a lot of Europeans say to me in 2020, they said, is Mr. Trump the aberration or is Mr. Biden the aberration in terms of the long-term attitude of the United States and the American people about their role in the world? I think that question was basically answered on Tuesday night. So that a lot of less reliance on the United States, I think, is rapidly becoming what Europeans are going to have to be confronted with.
Yeah, and let's talk about that, Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS News military analyst. Nature abhors a vacuum. If the United States sort of recedes in its role in world leadership, and I think, you know, walking away from Ukraine, which looks to me like is a very real possibility, doesn't this just empower some of the autocrats in the world? I'm thinking specifically about President Xi in China and Vladimir Putin.
Well, I would say it does, frankly, because I think the knock-on effect of us ending military assistance to Ukraine is not only a bit of a capitulation in terms of how it affects Ukrainians, but is actually a blow to NATO unity. As NATO had come together over the last 4 years in response to this aggression, even expanded NATO, adding two partners in Sweden and Finland. So ultimately, the question will not be what happens to Ukraine so much as what happens to NATO. As Mr. Trump has also said, beyond simply no longer supporting that, which is a NATO policy in Ukraine, but also what he sees about NATO more broadly is of concern. He has said in the past that he would pull us out of NATO. Many of his advisors in the first term said if he was elected again, he would do so. And you're right. Doing that will therefore make it much more likely that Mr. Putin will try to spread his influence, what he calls Ruski Mir, which is the Russian world, and those countries that have Russians living there, he thinks should be much more subservient, at least, if not part of Russia, Baltic republics being a good example, other places like that in the region. Whether the Europeans can come together and resist that is a question. And then second of all, you know, I always come back to the Prime Minister of Japan, who visited Mr. Zelensky one time in Kyiv about a year ago, and said to him, if you want to deter Chinese aggression in the Indo-Pacific, then you need to win the war in Ukraine. And the argument that, one, you could end the war in Ukraine, but still bolster your credible deterrent in the Pacific, I think is somewhat specious, though that argument is made. And Mr. Trump as well, it'll be interesting to see what he does towards our alliances in the Pacific, which Mr. Biden has tried to bolster, whether it's with Korea or Japan or the Philippines or the AUKUS agreement with the United Kingdom and Australia. And last but not least, he has said that he is somewhat skeptical about, you know, trying to protect Taiwan against a Chinese aggression, whether or not he'd be willing to do that. So all those things are possible, and I think there's a real possibility if the United States backs out, as you say, vacuums are filled by others.
Yeah, and, you know, the Taiwan situation is really a fascinating one because, you know, I don't know how equipped we are to defend Taiwan. I guess we would have to do it through, like we had been doing with Ukraine, right? We'd have to arm them and put sanctions on China. I mean, a military response from the U.S. is not likely, should China make that move, is it?
Well, it's certainly possible, and the United States has configured our military forces to be able to do that. But you're right, just look at the geography and the close proximity of Taiwan to China makes that problem very, very difficult. That being said, there's two other things that need to be reminded about. One is an amphibious operation by the Chinese across the straits is a very, very difficult operation. And the Taiwanese have a fairly good military. Mr. Trump has actually urged them to quadruple their defense spending, which I think they'll at least increase it, makes it a bit more difficult than some might well imagine. And then secondly, one thing I worry about, if the United States retrenches, as we're discussing, what is that effect then on things like nuclear proliferation? If you're Taiwanese or if you're a Eastern European country and you say we can no longer depend on the United States for a credible deterrent strategy, then perhaps what we need to do is develop our own nuclear weapons to at least create some sort of a limited deterrent posture vis-a-vis a large neighbor, be that neighbor Russia or be that neighbor China.
Wow. The more you think about it and the issues that exist in the world, the larger this big reset looks like it's going to be. And we can't forget what's happening in the Middle East. While the president-elect has acknowledged maybe pulling back in Russia and dealing with the Eastern Bloc, what about Israel? Do they plan to double down and and get involved even more in the side of Netanyahu?
Well, the most effusive praise for the president-elect probably came from Benjamin Netanyahu in a tweet that he talked about. This was an historic political comeback of tremendous ramifications. Talked about, you know, the bargain of defending Israel and the agreement between the United States and Israel. So Mr. Netanyahu is widely believed to have wanted Mr. Trump to get elected, and certainly that has what has transpired. And it also makes the possibility of a ceasefire, I would say, in Gaza between now and the inauguration pretty unlikely, even though in militarily it appears the Israelis have pretty much destroyed Hamas. Politically, they've destroyed the leadership, most notably Yahya Sinwar. But moving towards any type of ceasefire seems increasingly problematical until Trump is in office. And furthermore, it seems to me with the invasion of Lebanon, with the strikes against Iran, with the strikes the Israelis have also done in Syria, that the Netanyahu government may now be bent on, frankly, reordering the whole region and trying to reduce for a long period of time not only Hamas, but the influence of Iran in Lebanon and Syria on the West Bank and elsewhere. And we have the real possibility of another Iranian response to the Israeli strike, which could cause that to escalate. And Mr. Netanyahu, I think, if he got in that position, would try to pull the United States into it as well in an effort to defeat Iran once and for all.
And that would be potentially cataclysmic in the region and beyond if you see that kind of escalation. And barring that, which we all hope doesn't occur, what does the future look like in Gaza, in Lebanon, and surrounding areas? Is there a plan in place? Does the Netanyahu administration, have they said anything about how they would reorder the region?
Yeah, not really. Except to say that, you know, that they want to make sure that there's no more threat posed by Israel from the Gaza Strip or by Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. Beyond that broad objective, what kind of a structure politically you create in the Gaza Strip has been something that the Biden administration and others around the world have been urging Mr. Netanyahu to try to outline. And he has so far basically ignored that particular request, with leaving by default, it seems to me, some kind of Israeli military occupation for an extended period of time and a low-level insurgency with the remnants of Hamas, you know, trying to recover. And that's the situation that you're going to be confronted with. I guess an example, I mean, immediately about the same time as Mr. Trump was winning the election, Mr. Netanyahu announced that he had fired his defense minister, General Gallant, who was really a moderate in the coalition. And what he fired him over, I think, was interesting. One is Gallant had urged him to come up with some kind of a political outline of how we're going to administer this after the war is over, number one. Number two, he had urged him to go to a ceasefire, he, Netanyahu, in order to try to get some possibility of recovering at least some of the hostages. Number three, he had urged Netanyahu to promise to create a commission to examine how is Israel so surprised strategically on the 7th of October, 2023. And then last but not least, the defense minister had insisted that very religious young Israeli men should still be conscripted in the military. Right now, they are exempt. Mr. Netanyahu rejected all four of those particular ideas, and that was the basis upon which he fired his defense minister and put a guy in there as defense minister by the name of Israel Katz, who knows very little about security and the national security, but is a very loyal Netanyahu supporter.
He is Colonel Jeff McCausland, always kind enough to take time for KMOX. Colonel, thanks so much for taking time, and we're sorry to put you through the rigmarole, but we're going to have quite a different world here in a couple of months.
I think you're correct. Always a pleasure to talk to you guys.
That's Jeff McClausland, Hancock, and Kelly. Roll on right here on the greatest radio station in the world, KMOX.
This is the Guess Who, is it not?
No.
Oh, it's Lenny Kravitz. Swinging Lenny Kravitz.
Yeah. Right. And he's like 65 and he looks like he's 30.
Yeah,
like you probably like contemporaries, right?
Yeah.
You guys about the same age?
There's a lot of people.
Can you play guitar?
A little bit. No.
Can you read music?
Yeah,
that
yeah.
music.
Yeah.
Can you read guitar music?
Well, sure.
Wouldn't it be different? Piano music is different than guitar music, isn't it?
Well, I mean, they've got notes.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about the notes, Michael. It's when you're writing music, you gotta have notes on paper.
Oh, you're teaching me things.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, you and I was thinking about us getting into the movie business, you know, because
oh,
we
yes.
had come up with that idea for a movie story.
Brilliant.
And since we haven't written that one yet, that's going to become a bestseller.
All right.
I thought I'd tell you what I think our second movie ought to be.
All right.
All right?
Okay.
It kind of got lost in the whole, you know, election year. But that whole pager thing blowing up.
Yeah,
Of Hezbollah. Yeah. So my understanding is some, you know, Israeli company slash government operation sold the Hezbollah these pagers that were used for their first responders, their military elites, etc.
Well, and the terrorists. That's how the terrorists communicated because they didn't trust the cell phones.
Right. And so they're using these pagers, which obviously had to work for a consistent long period of time.
Right.
And then one day they just blew them all up. The story of how you got to be the salesman to be like, guys, you need these pagers. And don't you think that'd be an incredible story
It's an incredible story. Yeah. Because you're right. You got to be in the manufacturing, you know, site to rig them so that they will explode.
Right.
And they're, you know, pagers are not big devices.
No.
And in most cases, they just injured people. A few folks did die from the explosions, but it's kind of a wild, just the logistics of how you would pull that off would be fascinating, and we'll never know.
Yeah.
So that's the nice thing about movies is you can just make it up.
Well, and that's essentially what we did with our idea. And, you know, it's hard to believe that 2004 was considered the good old days. But looking back at the good old days of politics, John, if you remember, that was the presidential election with George W. Bush and
John Kerry.
And they both were – Iowa was a swing state.
Yep.
And they both were going to be in – I forget the
Davenport.
Town. Davenport, Iowa.
Yes.
On the same day. Mm-hmm. And anybody who's been around a presidential campaign, heck, what we witnessed with these two presidential campaigns this year, the amount of security, the amount of – I mean, there's probably more in law enforcement in the city of Davenport than probably exists in the whole state of Iowa any other day. Collectively, the whole state, you know, you could have thousands upon thousands of, well, what happened there?
Three banks got robbed.
The banks all got robbed.
Three banks in Davenport,
and
Iowa.
A brilliant idea.
They got robbed on the same day, and they never caught the guys who did it. And that part is true.
Yeah.
So we concocted this little screenplay idea where an old washed up Republican political operative who never left Iowa because that was his job was to win that caucus for the Republicans back
right.
in the day. And an old washed up Democrat guy that used to run Democrat campaigns, and they're in their 70s, their late 60s, 70s. And
they're in the quintessential diner in Iowa,
yeah, they're
right?
In a diner, and there's only two seats in the diner at the bar next to each other, and they get to talking and realize they've got very similar backgrounds. And I believe I cast Richard Gere and Morgan Freeman in the role of the not Richard Gere,
George Clooney.
George Clooney,
yeah.
And
that's the character that you wanted played after you,
yeah, that
right?
Was me.
Modeled after you, okay.
And the Republican guy was being chased by the IRS for unpaid taxes. The Democrat guy had just gotten out of prison,
yeah.
And they concoct this scheme to rob the banks because they know the security is going to be. Having both of the presidential candidates in town.
Yeah.
A brilliant concept.
And so,
it would make a fascinating movie.
Rob the banks, run under the nose of, you know, the most secure place on the planet. And then the story's a love story, and it goes on from there, and they escape, et cetera.
Yeah, because the Clooney, me, ends up falling in love with the FBI agent that's chasing him.
What, Rene Russo or Charlize Theron or something?
Give that some thought. And so they end up falling in love, and so she ends up helping them in the bank heist, and then at the end of the movie, they all leave the country and go to Nicaragua.
Yeah, there you go.
That's
so that'd be a great story. Maybe we got to see a different story as it relates to these pagers. Hey, incredible week, incredible couple of years.
Yeah.
Life moves on, and so does Hancock and Kelly, and we'll continue to be here to talk about politics in the year ahead.
Have a good trip, buddy.
Thanks, pal.
Brad Young is next.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.